Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk. Tackling the stigma.
Okay, so it's Radio City Talk. My name is Mick Coyle. Mental Health Monday. Obviously on the show we cover lots of different topics from a mental well-being point of view. We talk about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We talk about anxiety and depression and postnatal depression and things like that. But also there's an issue within mental health at the moment around overall well-being. And there's a story which I want to touch on the programme today, which we can get a take on from neuropsychologist Dr. David Lewis, who's one of the foremost thinkers in regard to how the brain works. Dr. David, thank you for your time and thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
My pleasure, Nick.
In terms of the story that we're looking at here, this is about what makes people happy. This is about work-life balance. This is about people finding a right balance in their mind so they can go about their daily lives in an enjoyable way without the threat of things like anxiety, depression starting to creep in.
Yes, that's absolutely right. This was based on a survey of 2,000 people throughout the UK, looking at the kind of things which make them happy, which they feel adds to their happiness. It was commissioned by a commercial company called Yushoy, which is a food brand, a snack brand. Clearly, they have an interest because one of the things which we're looking at, of course, in this particular piece of research is health. That's natural. But some of the other factors which we took into account when assessing people's level of life balance and happiness was materialism. By that I mean the amount of time and money they will spend investing in things which give them pleasure, gizmos, gadgets, all kinds of things like that. And maybe they buy to impress other people. And the other end of the scale, people who spend their time and money gaining experiences, learning something new, going to a pop concert, going to Glastonbury, going to the opera. It doesn't matter what you do, so long as you're giving your brain fresh, new experiences rather than the same old, same old. And we found that those who scored very high on materialism, whose focus was solely on basically acquisition of commercial products, tended to be less happier overall than those who were much more focused on just gaining things which they could store away in the memory bank and look back on as the time passed.
Now, I think this is really interesting. It's this idea that you could go, oh, well, I've got the new iPhone and I've got a 50-inch TV and I've got the biggest, you know, subscription package for my, you know, sport on TV and I've got a nice big house and maybe I've got a swimming pool and a nice car, but I still don't feel happy. But actually, if you think about it, the whole of society is constantly telling us what you do is you work to get money, you spend that money to get things, and those things will make you happy. And people are getting to the point where they're getting to the point where they're accruing these things or some of these things, and they're thinking, well, I felt good when I bought it, and I felt good when I was showing it off. But actually, 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, it was just the norm again.
That's exactly right. We tend to buy things perhaps on an impulse, enjoy them very much, get a lot of pleasure out of them for a few hours, a few days, a few weeks. And then we're tired of the latest new thing comes along. We feel that we have to invest our money and therefore our time in acquiring that. And, you know, the old thing goes into a bottom drawer and probably in a year or so's time it's sent off to put on eBay or sent to a charity shop. So I think if you acquire something which is going to stay with you for the rest of your life, not a material possession, but something which you could look back on a fond memory, whether it's being time you spent with your friends or your family, whether it's time you spent on your own, having a wonderful walk through a lovely park in the city or in the countryside or whatever. But when you're constantly stimulating your brain by giving it new experiences, by actually acquiring a new way of looking at the world. So that was one of the things which came out of this. Now, the other thing, and I know a lot of kind of mental health experts do stress this, and I think it is important, is the idea of loneliness. Now, by that I mean, I don't mean necessarily being alone, far from it. You can be very lonely in a relationship, as perhaps many of your listeners have found. It's really being able to be with people, but also to be comfortable by yourself. So what we call me time came out quite strongly in this survey. People who were able to kind of just go for a walk on their own or just lie down on a couch or a chair, just close their eyes, not to go to sleep, but just to be in their own heads, if you see what I mean. Because these days we live in such a glittering haze of commercial messages, messages we're bombarded on social media, that the brain keeps itself so busy, it never actually has time to go into relaxation mode. Or, you know, mindfulness is now a kind of a very important issue among a lot of mental health professionals, teaching people just to be comfortable with their own presence rather than having to constantly distract themselves in a way by putting other things into their brain through their eyes, through their ears, through their sense of smell or taste or whatever.
Yeah, well, and it's an interesting idea, that idea that, you know, if you are on your own, what do you do? Do you just kick back? Are you happy in your own company? Or do you naturally then reach out to the mobile phone? Do you naturally reach out to the TV and to try and think of something else to avoid time on your own? And I guess if you're not capable if you're not happy within your own skin, that means you're starting off on a negative footprint, if you like.
Yes, I that's absolutely right. And I think that, you know, it is quite hard to be in your own skin. Any of your listeners who've perhaps tried to learn or are learning meditation or anything like that know how difficult it is to keep your mind. One of the techniques in meditation, of course, is just to focus on your breathing. Sit still and focus on your breathing. And people who have never done this before start to do this, and instantly their mind is kind of flooded with a whole sort of ideas and worries and problems. It's quite hard to do this, but once you've acquired this skill, it is just a skill you learn, like everything else in life. It becomes a place of refuge, because however unfree you feel yourself to be in the real world, you could always be free in your own mind if you want to be.
Yeah, and I guess that idea of work-life balance as well, half of people saying they're struggling finding that. Are there things you can do, meditation you mentioned there, within a work environment, even if it's during a short break, during your lunch hour, that might put you in a more mindful position, that might be something which might aid the fact that you're not able to find it within your overall life, the work-life balance? Maybe, you know, one or two tips for people who can do things within the workplace.
Well, certainly. I mean, one of the things you can do in a workplace is just to, if you're feeling a bit stressed out, is just say, take some me time. If you're able to leave your desk or wherever you're working, just for 5 or 10 minutes, find somewhere quiet. You can just sit, and again, not necessarily meditate, but I tell you a very good, easy little relaxation tip is just to warm your dominant hand. So if you're right-handed, that would be your right hand. In the laboratory, where we train people to do this, we can actually see a measurable difference in the skin temperature of the hand when we kind of put a thermometer or something like that on the hand to measure the temperature. Now, why does this work? Well, your core temperature is 98.4 degrees, 37 degrees centigrade. Your peripheral temperature, that is the temperature of your outside of your body, is generally a lot lower than that. And as you become more stressed, your temperature of your peripheral senses, or your hand, for example, become cold. And this is because the blood is being taken away in an evolutionary mechanism, a fight or flight response, to fight or to flee. So it's going to your muscles and your brain. Now, there are three ways you can warm your hand. And by warming your hand, you're restoring the blood flow to the hand, and that will actually calm you down. It's an anti-stress, anti-anxiety measure. Okay, so three ways. Some people, your listeners will have to experiment with this. Some people can just do it by focusing on their hands. I'm doing that now with my right hand in the studio, and just imagining the blood coming to the hand and our hand becoming warmer and warmer and warmer. That is kind of perhaps the most difficult way to do it. The second way is to close your eyes and imagine you're holding your hand in front of a blazing log fire in the winter. You're snug, you're sitting in a comfortable room, big low blazing fire is there, you're putting your hand towards the fire, and you feel the heat in your imagination coming off the flames and warming your hand. And the third way is if you just hold your hand a centimetre or so away from your cheek. Now, your cheek is a hot spot, it radiates heat, and you feel the heat coming off your cheek, and imagine that is now warming your hand. And these three methods will, as I say, divert the blood away from the core, away from the muscles and the brain, and send more of it to the outside of the body, the periphery. And that in itself will make you feel more relaxed. So that's a kind of a quick tip for relaxation.
What a great tip, Dr. Dave. That's absolutely fascinating. We really appreciate you coming on the programme today. Thank you for your time. If people want to find out more about your work, you work through Mind Lab International, based at the Sussex Innovation Centre as well. And you've written more than 30 books, so any good bookshop will be able to get you the very latest from Dr. David Lewis.
Well, I would think so. And if they want to find out more about this happiness formula, I believe if they go to Yushoi, that's Yushoi. .co.uk, they can find out more there. But as I say, I think, you know, there's so much we can do by learning to control our own minds, that will help us live a happier and more fulfilled life.
Mindfulness, absolutely. Dr. David Lewis, thank you for your time. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Radio City Talk. Tackling the Stigma.
Yeah, Mental Health Monday returns. Another Monday here on Radio City Talk. My name is Mick Coyle, and I'm pleased to say we've got a couple of great guests on the show today. The first up is working in mental health. He's something of a mental health campaigner. We're going to be talking about his story through mental health and where it's taken him. We're also going to be joined by a psychologist on the programme, Dr. David Lewis. Now, this guy's written books and books on how the brain works, and he's going to be talking about happiness, but also mindfulness, which is a word which gets repeated many times here on Mental Health Monday. It's all about keeping your mind in a good place. I'm going to ask him for some top tips in terms of how people can make sure they're maintaining positive mental health on a day-to-day basis. Don't miss Dr. David Lewis coming up this week on Mental Health Monday. Our first guest on the programme, though, this week, I think we're going to span various issues because he is somebody who contacted the show based on the work that he's been doing and his own story to get involved with Mental Health Monday and to talk through some of the issues that he's seen throughout his life and his career. His name is Chris Brown, and he joins us on the programme. Chris, it's great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
You have got a great deal of experience in mental health. Tell us what you're doing in regard to mental health at the moment, because you're retrained to get very much at the heart of how people might receive mental health work in this country.
Well, I decided to retrain in the last couple of years. I previously worked in policy roles. You know, you and I have had we had a debate here once when I stood previously for Parliament, and it's a bit of a career change, but I've worked with organisations like Crisis in the past. I used to do their Open Christmas that they do in London, where we run homeless centres each year. And you see very vulnerable people there. And so it's always been a passion of mine to kind of work in this area. And I thought, well, you know, I've got two kids, I want a different career path, and I want something maybe a bit more sustainable and actually a career goal at the end of it, really. So yeah. I decided to retrain, and that's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, as well as working alongside in a nursing home environment as well.
Right. So in terms of the sort of experience that you had working with Crisis and those vulnerable people as well, was that the point where you realised that people's lives were more complicated than just their financial set up and the financial issues they might be facing?
Absolutely, and it's all linked, of course. You know, if you're suffering with depression, and perhaps that may affect your whether you work and your finances and your relationships, and they can all break down because of that. And you found a lot of people in that situation. You also found people who were coming from outside of the UK who may feel displaced, for example, or not getting the housing and work support that they should, and they would have ended up in that poor situation that they end up at one of our centres. And of course, that brings a whole different dynamic of mental health with it as well.
Yeah, I mean, and working in that environment within London as well, the sense of scale, presumably you became aware of it then, that this wasn't just one or two cases, that the mental health issue was one which was widespread, if you like.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think certainly doing the work that I have over the last year or so, it's that I think, you know, when you're involved in politics and people who make, you know, who decide on policy and decide that, you know, we need to talk about it more, whatever it is, there's not too many that have actually worked on the ground. And you don't, yeah, we talk about things like depression a lot, but we don't actually see the other scales of mental health, for example. I mean, I'm working with people who have got Pick's disease, for example, you know, dementia, schizophrenia and so forth. So we don't think about perhaps all of the different scales of mental health that there actually is out there so much.
And do you think that being in politics or having been in politics helps or hinders how you look at? Because, of course, one of the dangers, I guess, would be knowing the realities of how politics actually works, that sometimes, you know, having all the evidence in the world for something doesn't get you over the line when it comes before meetings and scrutiny committees and everything in between.
Absolutely. I think it's good that we seem to be talking about it a lot more. I mean, you know, whatever you think the government is doing or is not doing, for the Prime Minister to actually get up and actually talk about mental health and saying, you know, we need to do something about it, maybe is a good thing. And, you know, this show is a fantastic thing. We're talking about it a lot more. And I think we need more people in politics, you know, standing for Parliament, local councils, whatever, who maybe bring a bit more experience so that we actually get this on the table a bit more and talk about the issues.
When you speak to people who've got mental health issues, how much of yourself do you bring in terms of your own personal experience versus the training that you sort of get worked on and build up over the last and have built up over the last year or so?
Well, I can have a bit of empathy with people. I mean, as some of the people I work with, you know, have got quite severe depression. It's something that I've had to deal with in my life before. And you can relate to individuals, I think, perhaps when you've suffered with it yourself, but not in a patronising kind of way. But you understand that, you know, perhaps sometimes that they actually want somebody to talk to. And I don't know, my experience of being on the ground, particularly in nursing home environment, is that because either to do with funding or staff shortages or not having enough people on the ground, is that we're spending too much time actually dealing with kind of the functional care in terms of making sure that people are fed, clothed and so forth. And we're not spending enough time in terms of the well-being, actually sitting down, actually working strategies, actually making sure that staff are talking to individuals in those environments as well.
It's funny because if you go to the doctor and you went, "Doctor, I've got this rash," it's unlikely your doctor would go, "Oh yeah, I've had that rash too," or "I've got that rash as well." Was actually in your situation, you were able to say that, and presumably that instantly makes a connection. It suddenly means more to the person you're speaking to. If you're going, "Those things you're experiencing, yeah, I've been there too."
Yeah, and generally experience with people who have particularly suffer with depression, I think I have a similar story myself. You know, when you go to a GP, a lot of the time I found in terms of being able to deal with it, it's kind of almost passed on in a way that you're almost, you know, they say to you, "Well, here's a few pills to kind of deal with the situation," and then you're kind of left alone with it. And you may be referred, and you can seek advice from nurses and so forth, but there's not enough in the way of support kind of then on after. And that's the experiences that I've found personally, and the same experiences of some people who've had similar experience myself, you know.
And so in terms of, I mean, if the investment is to come into mental health as people are calling for it, and Theresa May hinted, but without actually putting forward in some cases the cash that would back that up, that training that's going on that people like you are going through at the moment, what sort of skill sets will the mental health profession have, do you think, to deal with situations when it comes to mental health in the future? If everybody who's able to go through this kind of training is able to get out into the community to speak to people, to make connections with people, what's going to be the benefit, do you think, on the ground for that?
Well, I think the key thing is well-being, and I think the key thing in terms of the way things are going, particularly after the CARE Act and the emphasis in legislation about well-being, I think that's the key thing about this, is that the Prime Minister talked a lot at the start of the year about saying that we need early years intervention and funding in that, but there's actually not been a lot of action in that. And I think that what I do, and I think what needs to be done a bit more, is in terms of we need to look at more prevention strategies, and local authorities need to have more prevention strategies rather than just kind of dealing with the situation when it happens, when somebody is suffering from a mental illness. That would be my big thing in terms of what I've learned. And I'm learning at the moment is that learning much wider than specifically the issues at hand, but how we can prevent through, you know, either healthy eating, making sure that people have got access to green spaces, for example, those things are important. Making sure that, you know, people are regularly doing activities in their local communities, making them feel part of everyday life, really, is kind of what I'm learning, I think, a bit more, which is coming through.
How do you think, and we use this phrase mindfulness, I'll be using it later on in the programme as well when we speak to Dr. David Lewis, mindfulness is becoming this thing where, I guess, if you're trying to organise a local event, you don't want to go around going, "This is all going to be good for your mental health," don't you? I mean, it will seem a little odd to people if they think, oh, there's a garden party, should we go? Yeah, apparently something to do with mental health. I wonder whether or not and we talk about the stigma on this programme, that people will think, is it for people who are, you know, struggling a little bit? Is it for people who've got anxiety or depression? But actually what you're talking about there and what people are talking about across the main is this general idea of mindfulness, that if people are engaged in different things through different walks of life, that means social interaction, getting out and about, sometimes physical activity involved in it too, it leads to better mindfulness, and then you're less likely, it would appear, to then go down some troublesome paths.
Yeah, I think so. I think, we tend to box people off. That seems to be my experience. But I think that seems to be generally getting a bit better. And like I say, programs like this, talking about it is really, really important. But boxing people off in society isn't the way forward. The more we can integrate, you know, we're people at the end of the day. And, you know, just because somebody may have an illness, it may not affect with every single thing that they do doesn't mean that they can't be a functioning member of society that can, you know, just do anything that you and I can do or whatever, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like when people talk about the autism spectrum, don't they, in terms of how it might affect people as well. But I wonder whether or not we talk about mental health and we should start talking about the mental health spectrum, yep, because it's such a holistic thing that we're looking about, and all the different aspects of how it might affect people's lives are so huge that idea that actually you could organise an event and people go, oh no, I don't fancy it because it's not my kind of thing. But do you know anybody who may have been affected by that? Well, it might have been me, or it might be somebody I know, or it might be somebody they related to. And eventually it you will find somebody who it's affected right across the board at any one point on that spectrum.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the more local authorities can do in terms of strategies to organise more events, to, you know, make us think about mental health more, that's part of that prevention strategy. You know, I've got some statistics here about, you know, I think in 2010, the Department of Health commissioned a report that said, you know, for every £1 invested in social and emotional learning programmes, you know, you got £84 back on that. So, you know, in terms of savings within prevention. So, you know, there's huge financial advantages, but also, you know, the emotional and physical side of it as well.
Yeah, I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, but when you host, or if you're to invest in events like that, do you flag it up as a mental health event? Or does it just be, or is it just an event which, if you get involved in, might just promote positive mental health? I mean, it might be absolutely no use whatsoever for some people as well. But it's an interesting way of framing the conversation, I think, as to whether or not, because if it is to be organised by mental health groups with mental health in mind, that will come from mental health funding pots. Sure. And if you're going to be using those funding pots, you kind of have to justify where you're spending the cash. But if you don't mention the fact that you're organising events, do you get the cash in the future if you've not got the right, if you're not getting the name out and so on and so on? It's a complex world, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if you're particularly organising community events, and I don't know. I suppose you would have to, in a way, you'd have to kind of name it as that, otherwise you might lose focus. I don't really know what the answer would be to that one, to be honest with you. But yeah, I think if you want to talk about it, you possibly have to name those events as being such.
And then you end up doing that slightly. I mean, we've talked about festivals in the past that kind of reclaimed some of the words. Yeah. I think it was Madfest that came on the program as well, which we're talking about the idea that some people will say you're mad, you know, if people have got mental health problems. At least if people within the mental health community using that word, it becomes the mental health community's word as opposed to a label which gets hammered with the mental health word. But then it's a thing, you know, is it about feeling good or whatever? The naming rights to be decided. We'll make that decision. Chris Brown is with us, working in mental health, now retraining the profession as well. Long-term career goals. What sort of career, you talked about your career progression as well within the mental health community. Mental health is now a thing which people are starting to open their eyes and ears towards. Do you foresee there being, I'm not trying to talk up your role in the future, but foresee that in the future, figures of mental health awareness will be more prominent in the community? I'm not talking about necessarily like going to see a doctor or a GP or a dentist, but do you think there's going to be more mental health hubs, for instance, within communities, more open and awareness about the types of people you might go and see if you have got a mental health issue?
I think so. I mean, as I said before, I think the fact that we're talking about it suggests to me that there is a future within this. You know, we've just got to put the investment and time within that. And as long as that's, you know, as long as we do that, and I think there will be more roles available, and I think more and more people will take on different projects in their communities, more hubs, as you've said. But thinking about it more widely than just simply about, you know, if you've got a condition, we've got to move them away or put them in or put people into homes or anything like that. It's about it moving away from that and actually having more community care, really. Bringing mental health back out into communities at the end of the day.
And I guess with that in mind, if people have got thoughts on mental health and people have got sort of issues that they'd like to raise and ideas about how they might want to bring those about, is now a good time, do you get a sense, to talk? Is now a good time to say, I'm interested in that, or we can offer this, or our community hub can offer this, or we have, you know, 5 nights of kids clubs and slimming clubs and everything in between, but we've got a couple of nights spare where we might be able to do mental health, that now's the time for communities maybe to start coming together and saying maybe we should have a mental health focus evening?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, if you're passionate about it, you know, talk to your MP, talk to your councillor about it, make sure that it's constantly on their thinking. You know, there's, you know, we're actually really good in this city in terms of we've got people like Luciana Berger, who's doing a lot of work. Richard Kemp is on the LGA's Health and Wellbeing Board as well. And there's particular MPs in Parliament who are raising mental health more than possibly have been previously. Norman Lamb is doing a good job within that. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I just think, you know, if you want to get involved with it, now is the time, really. You know, we've got organisations like Time to Change and so forth. There's a lot more organisations talking about mental health and, you know, be involved within that.
Chris, it's good to hear that you're getting hands-on when it comes to the mental health as well. I'm sure you've got your political ambitions, but we'll really hold you to task in the future. If you get into 10 Downing Street, I'll remind you of all the things that you've said, and we'll talk about funding again then. We have talked about funding. We mentioned it briefly. We've talked a lot on this programme about funding. Of all the things that you're going through, your training, the work that you're looking at, how much of it do you think comes with the shadow of funding, which has not been necessarily a positive word that people have been reading about in mental health? When we talk about money, do you get a sense of that actually you can train as many people as you want? You need the element of funding, though, behind it to make sure that it really gets out there.
Well, absolutely. And I think if you're looking particularly if you're looking at level I am in terms of a nursing home environment, you know, you've got care workers who do a absolutely fantastic job. You're doing a job that isn't deemed as a professional role. And, you know, it's a job that you can get into at entry level. But the skills and the training that kind of come with that need to come within that, and you're dealing with, you know, really, really vulnerable people. You know, they need to be paid more and they need to be trained more so that we have a better, you know, care system. You know, you see different stories. There was a program on Channel 4 about a particular care home, I think, the other week on Channel 4 about some of the problems they had there. And, you know, there's no legislation in place to ensuring that there is a set number of care workers on a site at one time. You know, these things, you know, are things that really need to be addressed, I think.
Chris, thank you for your time today. Thanks for joining us on Mental Health Monday. Good luck with the rest of your career. Do keep us posted as to where you're up to as well and various events that you're getting involved in within the nursing community and elsewhere. Thank you for your time. Chris Brown joining us on Radio City Talk and Mental Health Monday.
Radio City Talks Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.